On today's episode of the How'd It Happen podcast, I'm talking with Tom Schwab, an expert in what it takes and why it matters to build your business and your brand by being a podcast guest.
What's the goal? What are you trying to do? Because we'll have some people that'll come to us and say, I want to get on podcasts. Well, that's not a goal. That's a means to a goal. And you'll find if that's your goal, you're going to get bored after about 5 or 10. What's the ultimate goal here? What are you trying to accomplish with this over the next year? And then let's use how we can use this to achieve that goal.
We talk about his time in the U.S. Naval Academy and his service as a nuclear propulsion engineer. He sort of came to podcasting from a very, very different world. And Tom is a data-driven pro. He believes that more is not better. Better is better. He also preaches that podcast guesting is better than podcast guessing. And he tells you what that means in the episode. So I'm thrilled that Tom chose to be a guest on my show, and I think you'll be thrilled too. You can get a free copy of Tom's latest book called One Conversation Away by going to www.interviewvalet.com/HIH for the How'd It Happen podcast. Do that right now and enjoy the show. Hey, Tom, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining me today.
Mike, I am thrilled to be here.
So I told you a little bit about in the very episode intro, a little bit about Tom and what we're going to talk about today. But here's the rest of the Tom Schwab story. So Tom Schwab is an entrepreneur, an engineer, a U.S. Naval Academy graduate, and an expert at the art and science of podcast guesting. He's the founder of Interview Valet, where he helps thought leaders get featured on leading podcasts that, and this is the key part, their ideal prospects are already listening to. Then he helps them turn those listeners into customers. Tom's the author of two books. The first, Podcast Guest Profits, Grow Your Business with a Targeted Interview Strategy. And his newest book, One Conversation Away. Love that title, by the way, Tom. A manifesto for a rich life and a profitable business. You can learn more about Tom and what he's doing at interviewvalet.com. And he's on all the socials with the handle I am Tom Schwab, S-C-H-W-A-B. So Tom, I start every podcast with the same simple question, and that is, how did it happen for you?
It's one of those things where it only makes sense in the rearview mirror. I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, and this is not where I figured that I would be, you know, 4 decades later, right? I didn't know what a podcast was back then. Nobody did. But life has just been one series of one event leading to another. And I always look at it as an evolution, not a revolution, right? So by technical error and the grace of God, I got into the U.S. Naval Academy. If you're a U.S. taxpayer, thank you for paying for my education. Graduated as an engineer, and at that time, they needed nuclear power officers. Well, I ran nuclear power plants on aircraft carriers and loved that job, but you know that my commitment was up just about the same time the Soviet Union was dissolving. So I looked at it, said, I've done everything I've done, wanted to do here. What's next? Came to Michigan to work in corporate America, first as an engineer, then in operations, and was a great experience, right? And gave me a lot of background, ran sales, ran a distributorship. And once again, you think this is how life's going to keep going. And then all of a sudden, 2008 hit. Right. And 2008, Michigan led the country into the Great Recession. The distributorships came to us, or the manufacturers, and said, we want to buy back the distributorships. Right. Made a whole lot of sense to cut out the middleman until you look in the mirror and go, wow, I look like the middleman. Now they did right by us, but we had a sideline business, and it was rental of direct-to-consumer durable medical equipment rental. HubSpot once voted us the second unsexiest thing to sell online. But we were doing it in Michigan. And Mike, you know, I can count the number of thank you notes I got from orthopedics on one hand, but we would send these units out and half of them would come back with thank you notes. So I knew we were doing good with it, right? The question is, could we do well with it? And so I read a book by two smart guys out of MIT, Dharmesh Saw and Brian Halligan, who formed HubSpot. And I read their book on inbound marketing. I'm like, hey, this should work for e-commerce. And no one had ever tried it. So we tried it. It worked well. We were their first e-commerce case study, built it up from regional player to a national leader, sold it off. And then I started to think, well, you know that, remember how we used to guest blog to grow our business? I bet you could guest blog on podcasts as a guest, right? And that same way to get that know, like, and trust. And we started that about 2014. It was really early. Nobody knew what a podcast was, but as we were able to learn the process, get the data, build the team, we were really ready when podcasting took off in 2019. And now here I am in Kalamazoo, Michigan, leading a team of 30 people in Europe and North America. And most days I have to pinch myself on what I get to do. Huh.
So, congratulations, by the way. That's the online business. Was that Goodbye Crutches? Is that the?
It was.
That's a. How did you come up with that name? Like, what was the?
Oh, Mike. You know, I've come up with the idea that everybody's got their opinion, but your customers have the answer.
Yeah.
So, Goodbye Crutches was named by a client. Right. One of the doctors that always used to call us and say, hey, can you bring one of those knee scooters? And he started calling us the Goodbye Crutches guys. And so looked up and sure enough, that URL wasn't taken. I mean, I can still think of the night I was having dinner with an early beta tester for Interview Valet. And we were talking about different things. And he says, it's like, you know, you're setting up all the interviews, you're taking care of anything. It's sort of that white glove valet service. And I quickly pulled up my phone and thought Interview Valet. And sure enough, I bought that domain for like $10 and registered the company as that.
That's funny that you're always sort of on the lookout for domains that are available. I do the same thing. I have a whole bunch of them. I don't know what I'm going to do with. I mean, I don't have thousands, but every time I think of an idea that could be a company name or something, I try to grab it and figure what the heck, maybe someday I'll do something with it, you know. You mentioned first I wanted to ask you, did you sell any products from there's a company in the Milwaukee area called Brewer, Brewer, that makes all kinds of, you know, devices like that, you know, to help people, convalesce when they or mm-hmm. get better, you know?
Yeah, we did not. I'm familiar with them, but okay. We were really focused on just one niche, one vertical, one product. And it really was nice because it allowed us to get expertise in there, get known. You know, there were a lot of people saying you should do everything. Well, I didn't have the capital nor the time to do everything. So I'd rather do one thing really, really good. You know, some people call me an idiot savant. I joke some people don't know what a savant is, so they just say idiot.
And you said the orthopedics didn't like it, but is that because you were competing with them for the sale of the scooter or whatever, Tom?
No, actually, so it was just a sideline business, and orthopedics was fine. It's just when they wanted to start to go direct, and this was just a little almost passion business, or when it first started out, because I had clients that were orthopedic surgeons, and I remember them asking, where do you find these things? And back then, they were incredibly hard to find. And so I showed them the business model. You buy these things and just rent them to your patients as a service, it would work great. And they all looked at it and said, no, I'll just call you. You take care of it. And so it was just really a little sideline business that was never meant to take off. And then Goodbye Crutches became the largest distributor of crutch alternatives in the United States before we sold it.
So tell me about the sale. What did you end up doing with it?
Ended up selling some of the lines, some of the products, all the inventory we sold off. direct to consumer on that. And it was interesting. One of the things I thought the market was going to be around longer than it was, right? And, you know, Chinese imports came in that were unregulated by, or they should have been regulated by the FDA, but they weren't. And so all of a sudden, the quality went down, the availability went of them went up nationally, and then e-commerce got a lot tougher, right? My hat goes off to people that are in e-commerce right now. That is a tough business. And I think, you know, FedEx, UPS, and Shopify are making money on it. And Amazon, I'm not sure if many of the sellers are. So as I look back at that now, with everything with COVID and the shipping prices and stuff like that, I am glad that I was an early person in e-commerce and not somebody that came late to it.
So that's interesting, Tom, because I feel like, and I think I probably fall into this too sometimes, but I feel like everybody that's doing e-commerce has got, like, got the world right where they want them, you know, because it all looks so sexy and it looks great. It looks like you're printing money, but you're saying the shippers, the ones who are delivering it, are the only ones really getting paid.
Yeah. And I think as I look at it, I like to be at the front end of a trend, right? Where it's still messy. You're still figuring it out. It's still exciting. And then I think after whatever it is, a decade or whatever, everybody pretty much figures out the best practices. They do the same things. And I've seen that on podcast guesting too, right? Where we were early into it. We were probably the second agency out there. And while people were just trying to do these random connections, I'm like, just random exposure isn't doing it. So it's got to be more targeted. And then from my engineering background, tried to say, how can we make decisions based on data? And then also from my inbound marketing days, looking at it and saying, it's not just about an appearance, right? I've never understood PR. To me, you know, this is marketing. If it doesn't make dollars, it doesn't make sense. So really looking at it from how could you use podcast interviews like we used to use guest blogs and take the best that we've learned before and start to refine it.
Okay. So I want to back up for a second, if you don't mind. You mentioned that you attributed a technical error to you getting into the Naval Academy, and I wanted to make sure I understood what you meant by that.
It was a complete clerical error. So you cannot be in the military if you have depth perception, right? So I've never had depth perception since I was a kid. And so when you look through binoculars, the two images fuse together into one. When I look through it, I just see two circles, and I usually end up closing one of my eyes so I can watch it. Right. And it's just something I had. It was written all over my medical charts, but I'm old enough that it was written, right? It wasn't all electronic medical records. So it wasn't until my senior year at the academy that I'm going for my pre-commissioning physical, and they're giving me the standard test. Remember that one? Is the ball inside the box or outside the box? And I basically told them, I have no idea. You know, I've got monoscopic vision. I can't fuse images. Well, next thing I know, I'm at Bethesda seeing everyone. And finally, the senior ophthalmologist, whatever, at Bethesda is like, you've got monoscopic vision. You can't be in the Navy. And I was shocked. I was like, oh, you know, I've spent 3.5 years at the academy. Are they going to kick me out? And he was like, oh, no, they've invested enough money with you. You know, you'll graduate, but, you know, you'll never go on a ship. And then in some ways I was thinking, yes, I never have to be deployed. This is going to be great. You know, I'll be a CB and all this. And, instead the needs of the Navy were that, they needed nuclear power people. And I was a mechanical engineer. And they like, oh, we'll give you a waiver. And you can go on surface ships. So, you know, it's one of those things by the grace of God, everything sort of worked out. It wasn't by my plan.
Okay. So it did save you from being in a submarine then, at least.
Yes, it did.
Okay. And I noticed, Tom, that you also went to a military academy for high school or?
Yes.
So what were your parents in the military? What was going on there that took you down that track?
It was, I had a couple uncles that went to that school. And so I grew up, Roman Catholic, and, you know, there was a couple schools around, and one of them at the time was called Marmion Military Academy. It's now just Marmion Academy, and they had junior ROTC, right? So it was sort of an add-on class there. It was taught by the school was run by Benedictine monks, and I think the monks were harder than the army people ever were. So just went there, and to me, it was normal. And I think it really made the transition into the Naval Academy that much easier because, I sort of understood the culture a little bit more. It's not that culture shock when people turn 17 and they get their head shaved and somebody yells at them for the first time.
Yeah. Okay. So you sort of knew what you were getting into.
I think so.
Hey, everybody, just a quick pause here to let you know how much I appreciate that you've made time for my podcast. If you're not already a subscriber, please become one today. Leave a review and tell a friend. Now, let's get back to the show. I want to jump over this nuclear, what did you say it was?
The title is Nuclear Propulsion Operator. So,
okay. So tell me in as much technical but layman understandable terms what that actually means. Like, what does it mean to be that, and how do you do that on a ship or whatever?
It's scary to think about it now as I look back. You know, right now as we talk, there are people running nuclear power plants on submarines, on aircraft carriers. The vast majority of them are enlisted, right? So they're high school graduates. The average age is about 21. And they're very smart, very, very educated through the Navy on how to safely run nuclear power plants. And I was one of the officers that was in charge of that. I ran one nuclear power plant. And then before I got out, I was in charge of overseeing the two nuclear power plants. And people are amazed by that, you know, they've been doing this for decades and decades from the 50s, the 60s, and they've done it safely. They've done it reproducibly. And I think it's really because of the culture and the processes with it. And it always strikes me now when I hear people say, you know, oh, you don't understand my business. My business is so complicated. Mm-hmm. I could never teach it. I could never find someone to do what I did. And I just pause and think back on that and like, if they can teach people how to run nuclear power plants at 21 years old, you know, and they do it safely and efficiently, our businesses aren't that complicated, right? We should be able to learn that. And the cultural thing too, that's just as important as the processes and the training to have the culture to know what's the right thing to do and to do that. And so that's always the biggest thing that I've taken away from nuclear power.
And just from a practical, like a practical standpoint, is the nuclear power is powering the engine of the ship? Is that what's happening?
Mm-hmm. So nuclear power is basically just boils the water to make the lights turn on and the propellers go. And you've used it in submarines since the 50s. And then in aircraft carriers since the 60s. And so it's just running the plant, running all the machinery.
Okay, got it. And is there like a nuclear power plant? Is there spent like nuclear rods in something like that? Or is it a different type of technology?
Same technology that you see like, I think in Illinois, they used to have Zion there, Zion Nuclear Power Plant. Same pressurized water technology, and the fuel was good for about 25 years. So every 25 years, they bring it in, cut a big hole in the ship. They take the spent fuel out. They put the new fuel back in, and she's good to go for another 25 years.
And what was it, Tom, that kept you from being a career nuclear propulsion?
Yeah. Thank you for asking that. And when people say like, thank you for your service, I always feel uncomfortable with that, right? Because I had fun in the Navy, but that is hard on a family. right? So I, by the time I got out, I was married. I had two kids. And, you know, another deployment was going to probably wreck the family. Mm-hmm. So I just looked at that and said, I've done everything that I've wanted to do. And then the other thing, too, is that my year group was such, I graduated the academy in 87. And by 92, when I got out, there was so many budget cuts, right? Because they were, you know, the old Clinton peace rebate, right? A lot of my classmates didn't get promoted from 92 up till about 2001, just because there was no money there. And then all of a sudden it was, you know, September 11th hit and everybody got promoted. So I just looked at it and said, I appreciate and honor the families that do that and what they do for us, but I knew my family could not survive that. So that was probably the biggest reason to get out. And okay. I can still remember when I got out, you know, my dad called me a fool, right? It's like, all you got to do is put another 15 years in and, you know, you'll get a retirement. And then about 3 years later, I went straight commission job in sales. And that's when he called me a dang fool. He's like, you can't do this, right?
Stepped up.
Right. You're married. You've got a house. You got a mortgage. You can't do these things. But I know he wanted the best for me. But I think, you know, that's that whole thing of how did it happen? I don't know. Just sort of seeing what opportunities you had and walking into them.
And where were you living at the time when you got out?
I was in Alameda, California.
Okay.
And you want to talk about sticker shock? So all I'd ever lived on was base housing. And so base housing, we looked out our window, we saw the Oakland Bay Bridge, we saw San Francisco. It was beautiful. I got offered a job there by Stryker Corporation in San Jose, California. And I'm like, oh, this is great, right? And what I didn't realize is that the people I was talking to, there was like four engineers that lived in a two-bedroom house together just to make ends meet. And I looked at what the cost of living was, what they were paying. And I said, I can't afford this. You know, I'd love the job, but I can't afford it. And so that's when they said, we've got a facility in Kalamazoo, Michigan, right? Would you like to interview there? And so I went from sunny, beautiful Bay Area, California to taking a job in snowy Kalamazoo. But it was a great experience.
Yeah. And you've been there ever since?
30 years, literally when I took the job, I told them I'll take the job, but I'm not dying here. And family grew up here. We've got grandchildren now that live here. So it's home.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for sharing that. I sort of asked the question awkwardly, but I'm glad that you took us through that. I think that's really neat, especially what you said about 21-year-olds, you know, doing this now. And I'm off on a little tangent here, but there's so much discussion about the value of college and what, you know, your prospects are out of college versus what you, you know, what your prospects are, say, if you enlist in the military or if you go to trade school or whatever. And obviously you went to, you know, a top college, but you've been around all these other people that in the right situation with the right leadership, with the right training, they can, you know, they can do anything or nearly anything or lots of things that you wouldn't ordinarily think without, you know, a degree of some sort.
Yes. And also believing in them.
Yeah.
Right. The same way somebody believed in me to do that. And I have to remind myself that as a leader, right? Are they going to do it perfectly? Are they going to do it as well as I would? No, but that's my job, is not to keep doing that for the rest of my life, right? It's to build up that next level of leaders. And there was a thing in the Navy that said, you don't judge a ship by when the captain's there, judge the ship after the captain leaves. So he does, does he leave a mess? Does, you know, was it all personality driven? So I always think of that, you know, how does my company operate when I'm not there? And then even more, if, you know, if I wasn't running the company, how would that next level of leaders do it? And that's probably one of the things I'm most proud of in my business is the leadership team.
That is what you just said there is so important. First of all, this, you know, once you're gone, what have you left behind? There's so many stories about that. It's almost like the stories about people who have, you know, big brands around them are more important in the press, at least, than what the company is like once they're gone. And oftentimes the big personalities, well, they don't want to build a team, right? Because they don't want, they want it to be about them. And then the other thing you mentioned about, which I think is so smart, you know, I learned this in a strategic coach, a program that I was in the early 2000s, that, you know, if you want to know what's wrong with your business, you just leave and come back and you'll find out. You'll find out who all the wrong people are. You'll find out what all the wrong processes are. All that, you'll find out all the things you've been covering up or masking or band-aiding or being the hero for. You'll find all that out. So if you really want to have a business that's worth a lot more and that it is not dependent on you forever, and as a result is more valuable, yeah, maybe start by just stepping away and seeing. But that's a fearful thing to do, because you may not want to see what's actually there, right?
Like, yeah, it's sort of that stress test your business, sort of the same way you do with your kids, right? There's a certain point where you've always got to see them, but then after a certain point, yeah, you can go over to the neighbor's house and play. You can be outside of eyesight, you know, then you can go around the block, all the rest of that. It's scary. And yeah, they might fall down and get hurt, but they're only a block away. Right. So it's that stress test. And yeah, I love Dan Sullivan from Strategic Coach. I always joke that we both went to school in Annapolis. He went to St. John's, which is like classic education. And then I went to the Spartan Engineering School there. And so it was like two worlds, but it's a great, great city. And it's a great dichotomy there too.
Hmm. So I met you a little over a year ago, I think it was. And it was Jeff Madoff that introduced us. Jeff was on the podcast episode number 214, if you want to check that episode out. And I was so he was my first, he's how I met you and was my first introduction into what you do at Interview Valet. And so I thought, well, maybe we would use him as a sort of a test, subject for you to, you know, explain to us what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so Jeff, great, great man, wrote a book called Creative Careers. And it's really based off of his experience and also a course that he does at Parsons School of Design there in New York. And so he came to us wanting to use podcast interviews to promote his book. Right. Called a virtual book tour. How do I get out there? How do I get more known? And the goal is one, to sell more books, but then also to gain the social media. There's SEO value, because every podcast he's on, you know, you linked back to him and you're basically telling all the search engines, I think his site is so good that I would send people from my site to his site. And so it's a very, very powerful thing. And so we've been working with him for quite a long time to go out there. And he talks about the book. And one of the things that we learned from all of our clients and working with Jeff, really showed us that content is king, but context is God, right? Small g. And so if you just say, want to talk about creative careers? Well, as we listen back to the market, there was a lot of podcasts that said, I don't have a creative podcast and my book is not about careers. But it was still, you know, a great audience, right? He got on the Tim Ferriss show. Right. And so we started to look at it and, you know, his book is amazing. You could take that book and break it down. I think there's 13 chapters in it. Each one of those chapters could be a standalone book. Right. I mean, he's got one that's like the myth of the lone genius. Right. And, another one about relationships and everything gets done through relationships. And so we started to take those and really work with him to say, okay, on this podcast, let's really focus on this this aspect of the book, right? And then at the end, he can always say, you know, this is just one of the portions, you know, in there. And it gives people a reason to go back and get the other portions of the book. The other thing is that podcasting content is so, so valuable, right? Because you can repurpose it so easily. So now it's a proof source, and he can take that audio talking about that one chapter, and he could turn it into a blog. He could make reels out of it. He could make social media posts out of it. You know, he can get a month's worth of inventory out of every episode. And so, you know, that's a way to really get the maximum return on investment of your money invested, but even more so of your time. And, you know, so it's a, like I said, it's marketing, because at heart, I'm an engineer, I'm a marketer, and it's got to do something. It's got to drive results. And, I've been pleased, thrilled working with Jeff and everything, but also the people that he introduces us to and, you know, singing our praises and, you know, 70% of our clients come through referrals.
And just to add a little bit about his book now that we've brought it up. It's basically a collection of stories from people he's interviewed or had in his classes at Parsons. Mm-hmm. But he didn't just see the easy way to write that book is to just have a chapter about each person and the lessons that they gave in that particular class. That's for me, that's the easy way to write that book, but he didn't do that. Instead, he came up with these chapters, as you said, and then he weaves the portions of the stories from some of the individuals into each one of those chapters. So it's not like, oh, here's what happened when Debbie Millman, I think that's her name, came to Parsons. No, mm-hmm. It's not about that at all. It's about this idea and then how these people either explored, whatever, talked about that. And he did a really nice job weaving that together. It's almost like a fiction book. Not really, but sort of he didn't take the easy way out of that book. Like I see a lot of people take the easy way out and it's tempting to take the easy way out.
And it's easy to take the easy way out too. It's like, Tim Ferriss's book, was it Titans, right? It's basically a transcript of all his different interviews.
Right.
Great book, right? People like it. They like reading. I'm sorry. I'm ADD. There is no way I can sit down and read through a 700-page book,
right?
That's a homework assignment.
And so if you weren't Tim Ferriss, nobody would read it.
Oh, or exactly.
Buy it.
Right. Yeah. It'd be a good doorstop. That'd be about it. But how Jeff could really boil it down into here's the one key takeaway message in there. And then he had so. He's one of the most diverse guys as far as of his friends network, right? Of who he knows. And he was able to bring in stories from different people. And there were certain people he would reference in there. And I would say, I have no idea who that person is.
Yes. Yeah.
But there was other people. And I'm like, oh, that is so great. You've got to interview them for your class. So it's like that cross-pollination of ideas and people. I think that's one of the great reasons that his book has such wide appeal because everybody can find, you know, of the 50 people maybe he quotes in there, there's like 10 that on your bucket list to have dinner with.
And I'll get off of him in a minute, but the I heard him on the Tim Ferriss show, and I heard him on a Strategic Coach podcast, one or the other, and I just reached out to him cold and said, "Hey, you know, I was in Strategic Coach from blah blah blah," and he, you know, responded, and then actually came on the podcast, which I was very surprised about. But ever since then, I've remained, you know, in touch with him, and every time you meet this guy, and he's in his 70s. He will recommend a book, a person, a TV show, a documentary, something that's impacted him that he wants to share with you because he thinks it will, you know, positively impact you as well. And now he's doing this musical called mm-hmm. Personality, the Lloyd Price story, which is going to open in Chicago in May of 2023, I believe. So the guy is He's a creative. He has had many creative careers. Let's put it that way.
He has. And I think he's an example. Not you just put out, you know, ask the question, what we did for him.
Yes.
But I would say you could look at the same thing, what he has leveraged in podcasting, right? Because he is the ultimate in relationships, right? Yep. There's some people that are very, very transactional. Jeff is relational. And I think that's what works out best in podcasting, because you'll hear somebody on a podcast and you feel like you already know them, right? Because yes, they've been in your ears. He also does a great job of connecting with hosts, right? If there's an influencer that has this podcast that, you know, you want to get in front of their audience, well, why wouldn't you want to build a relationship with the hosts? And that's one of the things that we teach our clients, but also one of those litmus tests, right? If they're just there to use and abuse an audience, we want no part of that, right? Our mission is to personally introduce inspiring thought leaders to millions of people they could serve for the betterment of all. And Jeff really lives out that, right? When he comes on a podcast, he's there to serve, right? And he realizes that the more value he brings for the audience, for the host, the more value he'll get from it, and realizing that it's not just a 30-minute interview. It's that first conversation that could grow into speaking at conferences, could be a new referral source, a good partner. It's sort of that idea of one conversation away. I'm so frustrated in marketing. Everybody's talking about you're one funnel away, right? Mm. And it's a good marketing thing. They've built some business around it, but nothing in my life of value has ever come through a funnel, right? I did not meet my bride because I had the perfect funnel to put everything through. No, it was a conversation. I didn't get my best employees because, oh, I had a funnel and got everybody through. No, it's because somebody who knew me, what I was looking for, and what we were trying to do, introduced us to someone else. So I always just say, you know, funnels are great. I'm all for automation, but if you want something of value, it's going to take a conversation.
And I know I've seen you, you've written like the big fish don't swim through funnels, right? So the people, if you want the best people, you have to figure out a way to appeal to them that doesn't feel like they're being put in. People know when they're being put into a funnel, right? They know when they're being upsold. They know when they're being, you know, targeted for something free. And then they may do it, but they know they're getting into something. And people at a certain level just don't do that, right?
Yeah. We had one client came to us and I asked him, why do you want to do podcast interview marketing? And I loved his answer. This gentleman was a high-level consultant. And he said, because I think most of social media today is the digital equivalent of advertising above urinals. And wow. I laughed and I'm like, explain that to me. And he's like, well, people say you got to be everywhere. He's like, if one of my clients saw me, you know, in a men's room, that's a reason not to hire me, right? There's certain lawyers that, you know, advertise on a bus or on a park bench. And then there's other ones that are high-level corporate attorneys. And to think that it's going to work the same on both, I think is really mistaken there. And I think in some ways, digital marketing can hurt your business with that. And what works for a $7 tripwire product is not going to work for a seven-figure consulting product.
Hmm. So in the bio that I read, we talked about, or I mentioned thought leaders. Like, so you work with thought leaders. I'd like to get, I mean, we went through the example of Jeff, but why should thought leaders want to be on podcasts, Tom? That's first. And second, why do they want a real strategy like what Interview Valet can provide, as opposed to a podcast booking agency, for example, who might have a different approach?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think my answer has changed drastically over this last month, right? ChatGPT, when that came out, to me, at times it scares me and makes me so happy, right? The possibilities with it. But I think often now what we're going to see in print, you're not going to know, did Mike really write that, or was that just AI that did it? And to write a blog, to write an article, to write a book is just, it's going to be so easy and everything's going to sound so generic that nobody's going to read it anymore, right? So is that going to cheapen the value of print? I believe it will. But right now, at least, AI is not good enough to replace audio or video. So if you want to get out there and get known, I don't see how you could do that with a blog or social media anymore. I really think you've got to get your voice out there and or your video out there so people know it's you.
So let's dig into that a little bit. So you mentioned ChatGPT. That is a product that OpenAI, the company's name is OpenAI. OpenAI.com. You can sign up for ChatGPT for free right now. Mm-hmm. And what Tom is describing is you basically feed it a question or an assignment of some sort, and it can be anything. And this technology will produce a letter, an email, a white paper, a song, a poem, whatever you are asking it for, it'll produce. And maybe it'll produce it, you know, where you'd be like, yep, I'm going to use that. Or maybe you'd have to, but it's incredible. And it does it in seconds. Like, I've used it. I've been playing around with it for the last 3-4 weeks. I wrote 4 or 5 white papers for a business that I have an ownership in. They were just, you know, standard white papers for content, you know, SEO type stuff. Just fed it the question and it wrote really good, you know, as good as like most people could do. And for me, I wasn't scared by that because I was just so happy that someone or me didn't have to sit down and do that. But it will blow you away if you've never seen it before. But so you think that because of that and other types, that, I mean, there are competitors to ChatGPT too. The value that people will place in something that's written will be diminished. Is that what you're saying?
I believe so. Okay. Because the barrier to entry is so low now, right? It's so easy to write a blog. It's so easy to write an article, and at volume. So if it's easy for you and I to do it, it's also easy for the other billions of people in the world to do it. So okay. I think that volume is going to go up and the quality is probably going to go to this sort of middle of the road. Right. So if I go in there and say, what are the 5 biggest mistakes to make on podcasts? Right. I'm sure it'll give me out a great blog, but they're going to be the ones that everybody pretty much knew. There's not going to be anything cutting edge there.
Yeah.
And so I think the power of audio and the power of video is going to be so much more impactful. Right. Because people will know, hey, that's really Mike talking, you know, that's really Tom, because no computer AI would say and drop their G's on words as much as I do, right?
Yes,
and
it'd be too clean.
It's just too clean. Yeah. And so I think that the cutting edge of ideas is going to still be in audio and video because it's a little bit more raw. I don't know how long that's going to last, right? AI will get into there at some point, but I really think over the next 3 to 5 years will be the heyday for that.
And I think you're right. I sorry to interrupt you. I have seen video of someone like Jerry Seinfeld, whatever the computer that an AI produced, and it's pretty close. Like it's. Well, they don't produce the video. They produce the words that are then put on top of a video. But I think for those as a person, I think you have to have so much stuff out there that most people will never have, you know, in terms of source material for that AI to use, where it would be able to, you know, replicate you fairly well. Like if you're a president or you're someone who makes speeches all the time everywhere, that's a different, or a comedian, for example. But I think it would take a long time to get authentic about a most normal thought leaders, for example. Just a short break here to ask you a question. Have you read my book? It's called Ownershift: How Getting Selfish Got Me Unstuck, and it's available on Amazon, Audible, and everywhere else. If you're looking for inspiration that will help you unlock your greatness and potential, order or download your very own copy today.
And the other thing, too, is that it's the more automated the world gets, I think sometimes the more personal people look for. And I think audio is very personal. I think video can be very personal. If you look at what audio and video is working best right now, it's the authentic conversations, right? We're not, you look at podcasts, they're not like morning radio, where it's all super edited and, you know, zany, all this stuff. No, it's real conversations. And the same thing on video, right? It's the real background. It's the raw footage. Maybe even, you know, it's just not super overproduced.
Right.
So I think that's one of the reasons that I think podcasting is starting to merge now too, right? 70% of podcasts have video. So podcasts are audio and video. And your second question there was, well, if that's what's going, right? If that's the new gold rush, why can't you just do more is better, right? Just find somebody to book you on more shows.
Right.
And my word for this year, every year I have a word. And when I turned 50, I gave myself extra words. It's better is better. And a client actually brought this to me years ago. He said, more is not better, better is better. And Steve Acho is a recruiter out of the Detroit area. And he's like, you know, if I give you 4 billion resumes, does that serve you better than if I just give you 3 people that are perfect? Mm. Which one is better? And this idea of more, now I think it's better, right? So the idea of how can you get on better podcasts? And better podcasts are not bigger podcasts. They're better podcasts where you can add value to the audience, right? It's your people. It's very targeted. It's very topical. And then how can you get better results from every podcast, right? What strategies can you use? And there are strategies, right? It's not just going out on random exposure. What data can you use to get better? The data is starting to get better in podcasting. And I honestly don't know how people could do it without the data. And I remember somebody saying, well, that costs a lot. I'm like, yeah, but without the data, you're podcast guessing, not podcast guesting. Right. And you're just wasting your time on that. What other marketing channel would you do just on, well, I feel this and I'll try this. No, there's got to be that data. And even to the point where, you know, people will say, well, you can't measure the return on investment, or you can't measure the impact. And I'm like, if you do it right, you can. Right. It should be closed loop. You should know what's working because you should be doubling down on what's working and stop doing what's not working. Right. So to me, an analogy would be like, okay, if this is the gold rush, do you just want to grab a shovel, grab a pick, and look at any place in the ground? You may find gold, right? But most people will not. And even if you do find gold, if you don't know why it happened there, why that vein of gold is there, how will you ever get to reproduce the success with that?
Yeah, you're just lucky.
Yes.
You're just lucky. Huh. So, when someone comes to you, a Jeff or whomever, and they probably all come and say, hey, I've got a book, or hey, I've got this, and hey, I've got a coaching business or whatever, and I need to get more well-known. I need to get out there. They probably all come with this feeling that if I get on a lot of shows, it'll be great. And of course, based on what you already said, you're going to tell them, well, maybe, maybe not. Mm-hmm. But how do you help people get a clear strategy for what they want to accomplish and then actually get them on the right shows? How do you, without, you know, giving away any secrets, how do you actually do that?
I talk about this enough and there is no secrets, right? Mm-hmm. Everything's out there. It's really just the execution. And you started with it. What's the goal? What are you trying to do? Because we'll have some people that'll come to us and say, I want to get on podcasts. Well, that's not a goal, right? That's a means to a goal. And you'll find if that's your goal, you're going to get bored after about 5 or 10, right? The novelty wears off. So what's the ultimate goal here? What are you trying to accomplish with this over the next year? And then let's use how we can use this to achieve that goal. The second common question is people will say, yeah, I want to get on Gary Vaynerchuk's podcast, or I want to get on Joe Rogan's podcast. Mm-hmm. They'll think of podcast and not audience, right? So don't think of what podcast you want to get on. Think of what people you want to talk to, because it's not always the podcast. And you can start to say, well, my people are like, they follow Gary Vaynerchuk, right? Well, your chances of getting on Gary's podcast as your first interview are slim to none, unless you know him, right?
Yeah, or unless you're some big name that he wants to.
Right. Know and he, right. And he's probably reaching out to you already.
Yes, of course.
So what you're really saying is, I want to talk to his audience. Oh, okay. Now there's data that you can use. And you could say, okay, of all the people that follow him on Instagram, or, you know, everybody that goes to Harvard Business Review, whatever it is, what podcasts do they listen to? And you can build lookalike audiences. And so that's really what we're doing with our clients. The first thing is, you know, what's your goal? You know, is that achievable for podcast interviews? Who do you want to talk to? Right. So you've sort of got that, the message, the market, and then the machine is really, all right, once you get on that podcast, based on all of the data, the things that we're looking for, how are you going to move people from being just a passive listener to an active visitor to an engaged lead? Going back to the, you know, analogy, you know, I can take you where the fish are, but if you don't have the right gear, if you don't have the right idea of how you're going to land them and then get them in the boat, you're just going to spend a lot of time on podcasts. And we're data driven, right? IR engineer. And so we've tested this over and over. And like, here's something. Every digital marketer will tell you one call to action. I don't disagree with them, but on podcast interviews, we've tested this over and over. HubSpot's been a client of ours. They've looked at the data. If you give people three ways to say yes, it always converts best. And you think about it. If you're from on a stage, right? You just don't tell the people, you know, sign up for my newsletter. That's the only thing you could do. No, meet them where they are. Give people like a small yes. Give them a way to come back and get a free checklist, a free assessment. Something's not going to take a lot of time or money, right? The medium yes could be something that takes a little bit more time or money, right? I give my book away, you know, your book is awesome, right? That would be an investment of more time than anything, right? Your ideal customers for coaching and stuff, the price of the book isn't the sticking point. It's, do I have the time to do this, right? So that's the small yes, then the medium yes. The heck yes is if somebody hears you on a podcast interview and you are answer to prayer, right? They listen to you. This is a burning problem. Don't slow them down in a funnel, right? If they come with credit card in hand, wanting to talk to the wizard, let them talk to the wizard. So the heck yes is, you know, if you want to jump on a discovery call, you know, if you're a business owner that you think could leverage this, let's jump on a call and explore this. So meeting them where they are. And then the other thing is to send them to one page, right? Don't say, You can find me here on LinkedIn, here on Twitter. Here's my cell phone. All the rest of that will just confuse people. So send them to one place. And if you make it a unique place, then that's how you can attribute the traffic, right? Mm. So, I'll pull back the curtain, right? Give you an example. If I make a page that's interviewvalet.com/HIH for how'd it happen, right? If you hit that page, I know the only way you did that is because you heard Mike and I here, right? And then what's going to be there? The data says the first thing you show is the podcast artwork, right? Because you have no idea who I am, right? You have no idea what Tom Schwab looks like or Interview Valet's website. But when you see Mike's artwork there, it's going to be like, oh, I'm in the right place. And then it's some boilerplate text, you know, hey, if you're here, it's because you heard Mike and I talking on the podcast. Here's some things that we talked about. And here's the three offers, right? The assessment, will podcast interview marketing work for you? The free copy of the book. And then, you know, hey, if you want to jump on a discovery call, it's right there.
So it's one place, three offers.
Correct.
It's one place, three offers.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That simplifies things. I love that. So and thanks for taking us through that too, because the whole time I've been both. I've been a podcaster for a while now. And when my book was launching, I was on a lot of podcasts. So I've been on both sides of it. And I don't think I had I don't think I had the right plan for, you know, all the podcasts that I was on with my book. I think it was more of a, and my publisher, you know, put it together and stuff. And so I know how to do a podcast and get people on mine, but I don't know, you know, necessarily know how to get on shows or the right shows, except people I know that wouldn't say no, you know, if I asked them. So it's been really interesting to listen to this. And I think I want to ask you this, so many people want to start a podcast that are thought leaders, for example. And that's, you know, you talk about e-commerce being a crowded space. Podcasts are a very crowded space. Podcasts with longevity, maybe less so, but still a very crowded place. If you're advising a thought leader, a coach, author, whatever, or even someone who's got their own personal brand, you know, and they have who knows what they do. Maybe somebody like me got mm-hmm. their hands in all kinds of different stuff. Would you recommend focusing on getting your audience built through other people's shows? Or would you say, you know, doing your own podcast is a good idea? And I don't know if this is a fair question. So if it's not, tell me, but I just am curious for your opinion.
Yeah, I don't think it's an either or. I think you have to go back to what you were saying before. What's your goal? What are you trying to do with this? It's like Uber. Uber is an amazing platform, right? Should you be a driver or an Uber passenger? Totally different goals there, right? So the same way with the podcast, if you want to nurture your current leads, nurture your current audience, then you'd be a host, right? Because you've already got that audience. If you're looking to get new exposure, new leads, new backlinks, new social media, then you've got to go out on other people's stages. Right. And this idea that, you know, 10 years ago, this person, came out of nowhere. They got on the new and noteworthy and their podcast blew up. Yeah. That was like 10 or 15 years ago. The idea now that with there's 3 million podcasts, only 400,000 of them are active. The idea that you think I'm going to start a podcast from scratch without any following, and it's going to take off. It doesn't happen, right? The average podcast today gets 150 downloads per episode. And if you're trying to grow your business, that's a lot of work to just reach 150 people. Yeah. It's a whole lot easier to be a guest. And I would argue, if you're trying to go out there and get new customers, new following, it's a lot more effective too.
Okay. Well, I can say, as someone who did start a podcast with no audience, just, you know, for me, it was something I started because I was curious about it and I wanted to see if I could do it. But Tom is right. It's not easy unless you have a name that people will come to you no matter what you do. And those are kind of frustrating too when people start podcasts because they have a name and it's not as good as some of the others who are struggling, you know, to make it good. But building an audience is very, very hard. Very hard.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people that say, oh, doing a podcast is easy. Yeah. Well, it's easy. Like golf is easy and football is easy, right? I just want to play football for 2 hours on a Sunday afternoon and make millions of dollars.
Yes,
well,
right.
There was a lot of work that went into that. You just see the good parts.
Yeah. I'm glad you put that cherry on it because that is actually super, super true. Super true. Well, Tom, thank you so much for coming on today. It's been great to get to know you better and to get to know Interview Valet better. Appreciate the link, which we'll repeat. I'm sure you'll repeat it before you go. But is there anything else that I didn't ask you or that you'd like to leave us with that I tripped over?
Well, there's one phrase that I use in my life a lot, and it's called "What's ordinary to you is amazing to others," right? We all underestimate what we know and we overestimate what other people know, right? And it's one of the things I keep telling others so I can tell myself at the same time, right? We're blessed to be a blessing. So if you've learned a lesson, share it with someone else. And I used to be able to say, well, yeah, I live in Kalamazoo, Michigan, right? How am I going to share that? Now, you could do it over the internet, social media, writing blogs, whatever. For me, it's easiest to talk, right? I'm not an expert on everything, but I've got a very small, narrow thing of expertise, and I love going out there and sharing it. So, you know, as a podcast guest, a podcast host, whatever it is, to go out there and, you know, share what you've learned, to be a blessing to other people. And I think that makes the world a much better place.
Well, Tom, thank you for sharing that last piece of wisdom. If you want to get Tom's book, you go to interviewvalet.com/HIH. Do I have that right?
You do. Give you a free copy of the book. You can buy it on Amazon, but I'll mail you a free copy, and there's also an assessment there, right? That's that small yes that I gave an example. 10 questions, will podcast interview marketing work for you and your business? And then, you know, if you listen to this and like, hey, this is interesting, I'd like to talk about, you know, how I could use it for my personal brand or for my business, I'll put my calendar schedule and link there, and we can talk about it.
Oh, wonderful. All right. Well, take Tom up on his offer. I certainly have. And I've learned a ton. So thanks so much.
Thank you, Mike.